Hey guys, this is Cole Weicher.
Hi, I'm Neil Collins.
This is Jochen Graf.
And you're listening to the Unused Substitutes.
The Unused Substitutes.
The Unused Substitutes.
Hey there, little Red Riding Hood, I...
Everyone, and thank you for joining up me tonight on the Unused Substitutes podcast. My name is Stephen Cundiff. We are your green and gold gospel, your only source for year-round Rowdies coverage. We are live on Radio St. Pete Online and part of the Beautiful Game Network. Presented in part by Roughneck Scarves and Taco Bus. As I said, I'm riding solo tonight. Dan's under the weather. Matt's got family business to do. So tonight is only possible because of our Patreon executive producer. Tonight it is Randall Gainforth. Thank you, sir, for being a rock for us over the years and helping us continue to make this kind of content for everybody here in the Rowdies family. We would not be able to do it without you. If you want to tweet at me during the show or during the week, or if you want to just kind of give us some thoughts or whatnot, at Unused Subs Pod on Twitter is the best place to get in touch with us. I'll be looking at it all night, so that way we don't miss a thing. Tonight, besides the fact that it's just me, and I'm sure you don't want to just listen to one monotone voice for the rest of the evening, we're not going to make a very long episode. So I'm pretty much going to kind of just go over what happened this past weekend, which was, of course, the Tampa Bay Rowdies preseason game at Al Lang against FIU. And we will also start with the one player move that took place in the last week that some people were a little surprised about, but we had been told a few weeks ago that this was potentially something coming down the pipeline. Jordan Adebayo Smith has been loaned to the New York Red Bulls for the 2022 season. This is a move that makes sense. I mean, if I'm being completely forthright, I kind of was surprised that he was here for this year. You know, he's been a very situational player. He's got a lot of pace, but the finishing and that final third touch just wasn't there for the majority of the season. He missed a couple of very late game sitters that would have really put a game away. And, you know, you could tell that maybe a development atmosphere might not be a bad move for him because, you know, the Rowdies, for being a lower division team, play as a long-term professional club. We've got a lot of tenured USL talent. We have tenured MLS talent, well, at least in the context of players with that experience level. It's not particularly favorable for people in their early 20s to come in and break into this roster, especially a roster like ours where you've got 7 total strikers on the roster. You know, potentially upwards of 8, depending on who you want to mix and match into that category. it was always going to be a difficult thing for him to get starting time. It was difficult for him last year. You know, you've got a Sebastian Guinzotti that's scoring, you know what, more than 20 goals. You've got Steven Dos Santos, who's clearly an important piece, because when he was out, obviously we were in a heck of a rut. And you don't see him beating those guys. And even for depth perception, you know, depth positions, I mean, obviously he brings a different type of game to somebody like a Lucky M. Cassano or a Juan Tejada. But because the touch wasn't there, it was hard to justify putting him in over those guys on those substitution choices. So I think this is a great move for him. Neil Collins has always been very high on the New York Red Bulls 2 organization. For that matter, Lee Cohen has been very high on the New York Red Bulls 2 organization. We've obviously had a lot of players come in from that organization into ours after the MLS chances kind of those candles dimmed. We would end up picking them up for a long-term USL proposition. And that relationship has worked great. We've picked up a lot of solid players over the years. Evan Laura, of course, being one of them, that were very, very good contributors to our club. So hopefully this does Jordan some good. It's a bit of a reciprocating relationship now, finally. When you're looking at New York Red Bulls 2, you know, David Wolniak is not the coach anymore, or John Wolniak, not David. How does that potentially impact things? I mean, that's just going to be something we're going to have to wait to find out. I sincerely don't believe it's a bad move for Jordan. I'm excited for him. And we'll see what happens. And we'll see, depending on what he does, we'll see him back in 2023, hopefully. A rejuvenated player. And we'll see how the roster kind of looks at that point. So, seeing as he was not on the field for this past weekend, let's get into the who was on the field. So, in the first half, we came out with a 3-5-2, pretty standard stuff from what we saw previous years. Jordan Scarlett starting in the right defense. Ryko Rosarena was the first half goalkeeper. I'm going to skip ahead a little bit. We're going to go to the defensive midfield. So you had Lewis Hilton, and you had newcomer Jake Ehrman as your defensive mids. Left outside mid, Sebastian Dalgaard. Right outside mid was Connor Antley. You're playing in your number 10 role is Lakava. And then your two strikers are Lucky M. Cassano and Steven Dos Santos. The two players that were definitely something that we were looking for, definitely something we wanted to see some early minutes to see how this defense was going to look this upcoming season, Timmy Mule ended up being your first half center back in this particular matchup. And then on the left-hand side, we started with a trialist who we did confirm was Brandon Turaj from SMU, is presently the one on trial. For what it's worth, it's the only actual trialist that we saw this past weekend. I'll get to that in a second. I gotta say, I'm not particularly surprised with any of the lineup that we saw. This is very much what we kind of anticipated would be the hypothetical, for the most part, hypothetical positioning of some of these players. The observation from this core group: Mule is very quiet, especially when you consider what, like, Forrest Lasso used to be. It was a very startling change, because for good swaths of the game, really the only person making a lot of noise was Brandon Turaj. Which, I mean, part of that's going to be him trying to earn a spot on the roster, certainly. But for somebody that might be, you know, trying to get a center back role, I didn't hear much of Mule back there barking instructions at all. And Scarlett, for the most part, was pretty quiet as well. Which kind of surprised me in a sense, too. Being the tenured, long-term player that he has been on this team, with the amount of minutes he's played on this team, it was kind of surprising. You know, supporting that, of course, is Ryko Rosarena, who you could, I mean, language barrier is going to be an issue. I mean, that's just going to be a potential issue because you can't give any kind of complex instructions. You know, it's going to be just a lot of one-word type stuff. And he was trying. I will give him full credit. He's definitely trying a little bit. But it's, I mean, we're only 2 weeks, 3 weeks into, I mean, what are we, 3 weeks into preseason now? Something like that. You know, we don't really have a firm starting center back yet. So Ryko doesn't, I mean, you could tell, Ryko doesn't have the kind of relationship that Forrest Lasso and Evan Loro did over the last couple of years. That we're just not there yet. So, you know, especially early preseason, that's going to be something that I'm going to be looking for to see how that develops. Who potentially he can, because, you know, if you're Neil Collins, one of the things you're looking at when it comes to a center back and potentially who your starting goalkeeper is who are the players that make that connection the strongest? Who are the players that really can kind of get in each other's head to a point of knowing where the other player needs you to be? And the type of movement you need to be able to do and recognize. And I think that's going to be something that Neil is very much going to be looking at as we go through preseason. The three center mids, Lakava, Aramin, Hilton. So that triangle, there was a big shift that would happen. And we'll go a little bit tactically here to kind of explain this as best I can on radio, of course. On the attack, this formation rotates really heavily. And it was actually very super obvious early in the game how this rotation worked. Typically speaking, Lucky M. Cassano would play on the left-hand side, Steven Dos Santos on the right. That makes sense. Steven played on the right-hand side of the field for the majority of the year last year. When we would get the ball, those two guys would drift to their left. And Lakava would go from the midfield and make runs to the right-hand corner. So essentially, you would end up kind of playing with three up front when that took place. Aramin would push up the field, kind of like what Lawrence White did for us last year and players like Jordan Doherty at times. You know, Aramin pushes up into the 10 role to fill Lakava's gap, and Hilton would stay back. And that's kind of how that triangle would kind of rotate from two defensive mids to essentially a striker and one attacking mid. That's kind of how that triangle would rotate. But because Lakava's making that run, Antley isn't having to make, you know, deep bombing runs up the side because that space is basically filled for the most part. So he can tend to stay back a little bit. That allows Scarlett and Mule, and for that matter, Turwash, to kind of shift left a little bit, because obviously Antley doesn't have to push up the field, meaning that Sebastian Dalgaard on the left mid now has the ability to push up the field himself. And you saw this, like, there was this massive rotation within the formation when we were on the attack that was, I mean, it was really, really super obvious how that was playing out. And granted, it's college, you know, opposition. The goals that we scored weren't particularly pretty goals. You know, the first goal is scored basically like 5 minutes into the game. Lakava pushes up the field on a dribble. He tries to go left out towards like a Lucky or Steven. It doesn't work. The pass gets intercepted, but Hilton cleans up the play. By the time Hilton gets to that ball, Antley has now recovered on the far right-hand side. He's pushed up. Hilton plays it off to Antley. Antley goes ahead and dribbles around the defender that was marking him and goes to the end line, makes a simple cross in. Lucky just finishes basically a tap-in net from inside the six. Nothing spectacularly complicating, but it's the formation and the movement and the types of runs that players are making that was encouraging. You know, Jake was the one bombing up the field for that, or in this case, Lukavas, was the one bombing up the field, trying to make something happen. Hilton is there to clean it up. Because Aramid obviously has moved off to the left-hand side while this kind of, you know, formation attack works. And then Antley, recognizing that the pass was intercepted and that Lukava is now kind of out of the play, Antley makes that later run, fills in that gap on the right-hand side, and then that's kind of how that play develops. Made perfect sense. The second goal of the game is a throw-in. It comes in off a throw-in on basically coach's side of the field, a midfield section. Of course, to further illustrate all of this, first half we're going from right to left, looking for the coach's sideline there, the midfield seats. Simple throw-in on this side of the field. Obviously, Lucky's on the sideline looking for the deep throw-in. You've got Dalgard looking for like a short throw-in. I think Turwaj or Dalgard, I'm not sure which, I don't remember which one, was making the throw-in themselves. But Steven Dos Santos makes a late check-in. When he makes that late check-in from kind of more of the middle of the field, he draws both of the center defenders from FIU in with him. Lukava, when he sees this, starts to make kind of a jogging move forward as the ball gets thrown in. Well, Dos Santos and both defenders both check in too hard, and the ball goes over all three of them. And lo and behold, now you have Jake Lukava by himself with the ball, and the left defender that would be the only other player to recover is nowhere near ready to make that type of run. So Lukav is basically just by himself at this point. And he just dribbles into the net, takes a use, and that highlights online. He takes a touch to the side from the goalkeeper and then just, you know, taps it in an open net. It's sloppy play. Some of that's just, you know, you're playing a college team. You know, you can't. I'm happy Lukava made the run, but that whole play happens. You're probably never going to score a goal like that in a professional rank without some serious questions being asked of the other team. It was pretty sloppy defense to have that whole situation develop. But at the same time, let's give credit to where it's due. You know, Lukava's making the run. He sees the fact that Dos Santos is checking in, so he's filling in that gap up on the top line. That's his job as a number 10. Let's give him the credit that's due there on that particular moment. He gets a lucky break that the ball goes through, but it's important because he's super involved in both of those first half goals. And for long stretches of that game, Lukava was undeniably, I think, in my opinion, the most interesting player on the pitch with the ball. His presence, his ball handling, his distribution, they were top-notch. Antley made some noise doing some one-on-ones on the right-hand side. Dalgard had a couple of long-range efforts. He wasn't afraid to take a crack at it. Overall, I was impressed offensively. I was actually very impressed with how that plays out. The formation seems to work. It's stable. The guys seem to recognize their roles really well. Defensively, so the first half, Brandon Turwaj, he takes a knock in the head and has to come out for a bit. He ends up coming out of the game about maybe 15 minutes into the match, and he's getting evaluated for like a head-type injury. The player that ends up replacing him is the first of three Academy players that we saw on the field this past weekend. In this case, it's a kid named Camrith, who is a Notre Dame committed player coming out, graduating high school this year. He's like, it's one of these, almost 6 foot tall, if not 6 feet tall, high school seniors. I'm going to be honest. If he wasn't with Notre Dame, I'd be telling the Rowdies, dude, you should probably sign him. That kid absolutely bossed the college kids he was up against. Physically dominating. His positioning was good. He was vocal when he needed to be. There were some rough edges there, but obviously this is not a team he plays with, consistently. I would probably speculate over the course of, winter break. So, there's obvious, unfamiliarity there and just being youth in general for some of the passes that maybe he made. But defensively, I thought his positioning was good. I was super impressed. I'm very, very jealous the fact that he's going to Notre Dame. I mean, good for him. I'm happy for him. Congratulations. I also wish we could get you because that dude looked great. It was really, really frustrating watching him going, I really want him on the team, and you know that you really can't make that happen. But the goal that gets scored against us, you got to mention it because it was an interesting moment for one reason. So it's essentially kind of a switch play across from the field, a bit of a counterattack type play. So your defensive mids aren't necessarily in a good supporting role for the particular moment. Ball gets switched in and the FIU, I'm pretty sure it was like their left mid, makes a central run, something we've been like begging, Leo to do for, a season and a half. This kid makes like a central check-in run from this crossfield switch. And Scarlett is just like zoned out. He is not seeing it. He did not pick it up basically at all. So this kid ends up getting the ball about 24 yards out. And there's basically nobody in front of him. Because Mule's basically checking in on the near post, making sure that route was covered. Scarlett was covering a ghost on the far post, if I'm being honest. So you're basically all alone in the middle of the field. This FIU kid takes one touch and then smacks a ball far post and slams it off the post into the net. And it basically goes like up after it hits the, to kind of give you an idea of like how well struck this is, it hits the post and then bounces back across the entirety of the net. Like he perfectly hit this ball. It was phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal strike. You can't blame Ryko in any way, shape, or form. It was, it was a perfect hit. Now, our Rowdy's comms guys described it as an upper 90 strike. It wasn't quite upper 90. It was about halfway up the post. But, it was an absolutely perfect strike. And I think it was more Scarlett's fault that that took place. You could tell he definitely felt it. Neil, however, on the sidelines was kind of ripping him a new one for that play. Neil really put that on Scarlett. Which I don't need to say what I've said on this show previously about Jordan Scarlett and who's the strongest of the defense that we've had over the last 2 years. But yeah, that Neil was very, very adamant that that should have been Jordan's recognition and Jordan should have been more involved on that play. Now, whether he could have stopped that from happening or what, that's obviously all speculation. I don't know if he necessarily could have checked in and stopped it, hypothetically speaking, but he gave him enough room to make a perfect strike, and that's the issue no matter what. So, essentially speaking, that's kind of your first half. Lakava and Hilton have a couple of good connections over the course of the play as they're kind of cycling balls through. Ehrman is feeding Dalgaard pretty well in a couple of plays. Overall, all the pieces seem to be working, offensively speaking. It was encouraging. That was a very much encouraging thing. Second half, line change. And from what I could tell, looked very much like a complete formation change to begin with. So, Connor Antley moves into a center back role. CJ Cochran is now starting a goalkeeper. And Brandon Terwage, after getting evaluated for about an hour at this point, it's determined he seems fine. He thinks he's doing okay, and they decide to go ahead and let him back in. In left defense, you have an academy kid who looks, honestly, at this point, he's a very small kid. He might even be like 17 at this point. One of your two defensive mids is an academy kid. Same thing. Looks like he could be like a 17-year-old kid. So, right away, two of your, you know, five defensive players, essentially, at this point, are children. So, there's a reason we only score one goal in the second half. Ekra is your other center mid. But at this point, this is where the formation shifts. We go to an actual 3-4-3, it looks like. Because your strikers, across the top, Guizzi, Kyle Gregg, and Juan Tejada, are basically, they're all playing as legit strikers in this setup. Because they pretty much are all on the back line the whole match. Or the second half in this case. And your outside mids, we get our first look at Leo Fernandez on the left, and Deion Harris comes in on the right. And if I didn't mention it, Jan Ekra is your other center mid. Now, here's the problem. And I don't know if this is more to do with the fact that we have academy kids that we're playing in this particular matchup, or if it was just maybe Ekra didn't fully understand the role per se. I don't know. But I'm going to say this. It did not work at all, in my opinion. I don't think it worked in any way, shape, or form. And here's the reason why. Ekra very rarely pushed up. And so essentially what it meant is you did not have a number 10 on the field. You had three in the back. You had two defensive mids. You had your outside midfielders. And then three strikers sitting on the back line up top. Which means there's like nobody in the middle of the field to push balls up through. So the only way you actually have a chance to generate offense is either down the wings. And you force Leo and Harris to make runs up the field along the sidelines. Or you're just lobbing balls forward and hoping that Gonzadi, Tejada, or Kyle Gregg can bring something down from the air and then work amongst themselves to kind of get something going up top. It looks horrible. And I don't know if that's because, like, say, Jan Ekra would traditionally be more of that offensive role, and because we've got the academy kid, he doesn't feel like positionally he can kind of leave him back there, and so maybe he plays a little bit deeper than he would normally. I don't know. But it does not function in any way, from what I could see. Yes, we get a goal. It's also a cheap goal. It looked really, really, I don't know, tacky is a good word for it. We make a run down the right side, and we kind of like do like this chip thing to the far post, because like the goalkeepers come out early, and the defenders are kind of in weird positions, and so he just kind of like chips the ball to the far post, and you know, we just tap in basically like an open net. And it's kind of just a really stupid-looking goal. The build-up wasn't particularly noteworthy. There wasn't any good dribbling on the play. It was just a tacky goal. Kind of one of those goals that you get from, like, professional players that you know are just better than their competition of the collegiate-level players they're up against. And they're kind of just doing it all sleepwalking. Like, it kind of, I'm not going to go as far as to say they were toying with them. They weren't, by any means. But it just, in that particular moment, it wasn't something you would want to write home about. And I think that was kind of disappointing. I know there's a lot of people in the fan base that they want to have a 3-4-3 potentially at times, but there's big questions about that. Like, how are you supposed to realistically attack with a 3-4-3? Are you just supposed to lob it up top and let the guys figure it out? Or is it always supposed to go through the sides? I don't like this lack of number 10, unless Jan is supposed to be more of a number 10 role in that situation. I don't know. It was weird. And maybe it's just because the trialists were on the academy kids were on the field. I don't know. It was definitely strange. Tejada at times would drop back in a little bit, probably more so than Kyle. Well, certainly more so than Kyle Gregg, but a little bit more so than Sebastian Guinzotti would. So at times, Tejada was almost playing as like a fake number 10. That gives Harris a little bit of room, but that second half especially, the touches were bad. The passing was worse. We really couldn't get much going consistently. We were playing very conservative on defense. I mean, at one point, you know, it's 2-1. We're about halfway through the second half. And FIU gets a corner kick. And we literally put all 11 guys, like, in the box to defend it. And it was kind of funny because you realize that, like, I mean, obviously, you've got two kids on the field that are, you know, 5 foot nothing. But outside of Kyle Gregg, there was like, and CJ Cochran, there was no height on the field at all. And so you're kind of just looking at this going, you know, let's assume that Steven Dos Santos is the striker on opening day. There's really only one tall player on the team on the field, potentially, at any given moment. Lakav has got a little height to him. I'll give him that, but that's something to potentially look out for, is our potential vulnerability to teams with height in the attack on set pieces. That's something to be noteworthy, because, like, Ryko's a shorter goalkeeper. You know, I made the connection with Ryko reminding me a lot of Diego Restrepo in terms of, like, a stocky build, shorter guy that could potentially cover a lot of net. You know, I don't know how that's going to play when it comes to defending set pieces. That's certainly something to look out for, I think. You know, let's talk about Antley for a second, playing as a center back. You know, we've known Antley is a type of defender in the past. It's something that he's made a name. It's not his starting role. You know, his youth, we got a chance to interview and talk to him in a pregame show last season. And, you know, he described himself as more of a midfielder. And the defensive thing was actually something that was kind of forced to adopt into. And it just happened to work out pretty well. So Antley comes in as a center back in this weird situation, right? He's got an academy kid to his left, and he's got a trialist on his right. Antley basically just kind of, like, takes the role of, like, hey, I have to be a vocal leader in the back, and just, like, goes full send. This dude was screaming his head off basically the entire 45-minute second half. Screaming at everybody. Screaming at teammates. Screaming at academy kids. Making fun of FIU players. At one point, the trash talking to the FIU guys, he starts talking to the coach like, what the heck? And I'm paraphrasing, of course, for the radio here, but he's like, what is this kid a freshman? What the heck? Like, he's terrible. What are we doing? Why is he on the field? I mean, Antley is literally just, we were joking around after the game. We were like, at this point, that was so funny to listen to that we need to just have, like, a Vice Sports special, Connor Antley versus children. Like, that needs to be, like, a thing, because I swear to you, that'd be the funniest content, is just miking him up for a game against a college team. It is so funny. The absolute trash talk that he was giving these guys. the whole match. And more so when he got into that center back, quote-unquote, authority role. I don't know if... I again, as far as his performance positioning, whether the boisterousness of how he was portraying himself actually came through, I don't know. You know, you've got, again, you got two temporary players, technically speaking, on the field with him at the time. So it's a little bit of a hodgepodge as it is. It's also a college opponent, so you don't really know. He's not really being, you know, taken on one-on-one. There was a moment early in the second half where it was not good. The defense kind of gets carved up a bit, and Cochran has to make a save. That was a little bit concerning, but I'll give him a pass because it was like 5 minutes into the second half. But, you know, and Cochran is a pretty quiet guy in that second half. You know, for all the chaos going on around him, you didn't hear much from him. Which, again, you know, I don't know what that says about CJ Cochran. You know, is he even here personally to try and press for that starting role? Or does he just not care because he knows he's coming back to OKC in 2023? You know, and I'm not trying to question his professionalism in any way, but it was interesting because there was a stark difference between like how Ryko was playing in that first half compared to CJ. I don't know if I heard CJ like at all the entire half outside of just shouting for when he would have the ball, when he was declaring himself for the ball on set pieces, on grabbing air balls. You know, Ryko, I heard more often, you know, doing little instructions, left, right, that kind of thing, compared to CJ, who basically did said nothing. So, yeah, I mean, it's... That was an interesting observation, too. And, you know, overall, you know, Turwaj doesn't look bad. Again, he's basically fresh out of college. I'm not... It's hard to judge based on one game. He ended up coming out later in the second half because he just wasn't, like... He still felt like something was off. I hope there was nothing like semi-serious there. I mean, obviously everybody's always jumping to possible concussions, especially with how prevalent that story is in national media. But, you know, it's he just wasn't sure of himself at one point, whether it was the head injury or what. He'd ended up taking himself out shortly before the game ended anyways. Actually, it was kind of a funny, awkward moment. He kind of walks off the field, is like, oh, coach, I need a sub. And it was like, guys, we're playing. Yeah, like, you need to have the ref stop the game so we're not playing a man down, please. Thank you. It was kind of a funny, awkward moment. Watching the trial is just walk off the field, like, signaling to Neil, please bring somebody else in. It was kind of a weird moment, but... Yeah, I mean, final thoughts on the match. I mean, it's a college game, so hard to say what. Hard to take hard conclusions from any individual performance. I mean, obviously, you look at bad performances against lower competition, and that's going to stick out more than anything else. But I was very much enjoying the rotation that we saw with the 3-5-2 in the first half. That was really, really something interesting to see. And I think that worked with the guys we had. And it'll be interesting to find out, like, you know, if you have Sebastian in there instead of Seba, I'm sorry, Sebastian in there instead of Lucky, you know, how that potentially looks. If you've got Leo instead of Dalgard, how that rotation potentially looks a little bit. I think that for me is something I'm looking forward to. And, you know, I know we've got a preseason game coming up here. We're going to be up against the dirty people to the east. The sick color purple. I mean, keep in mind, MLS has been in preseason camp for more than a few weeks now. They're well into the thick of things. Their season starts in like a week or two. You know, for that matter, there are MLS teams playing Champions League games right now. I would argue, because the fact that we have trialists in defense, because we don't really know who that starting center back is going to be, you know, I'm not anticipating great things from this weekend. I hope we score a goal, and I hope we don't give up like more than three. That's kind of my expectation coming into this match, just because you've got two teams on polar opposite ends of the preseason, and one of them has way more questions than the other at the moment. So I just, please score one, and please don't get like shredded, guys. That's my only plea. That is my only plea. Yeah, you know, I think that's my hope for this upcoming weekend. The game looked pretty good. A couple of guys' touch are still pretty rough, but that's okay. I think we'll live. So, if we're talking shredded, there's one thing that I need to address. And that is the fact that we absolutely shredded a guy on Twitter this week. And I wanted to say this. It needed to be addressed. On socials, there was an account that was giving one of our beloved, well, technically at this point, an ex-rowdy. It wasn't really trash talk anymore. It was kind of personal. It was directed at Evan Lauro. And I think we rightfully called out the guy. It happened last night. I didn't even see it until this morning. But, you know, I think we effectively called out the person. Like the Twitter account that he was doing it from is like locked down now. Like, he doesn't share anything publicly. So I think we've done a really good job of kind of shaming him into what he did. But it was a good moment to realize that, you know, some of these guys in this professional athlete world, they don't, if something goes wrong, you get flooded with so much negativity at times. Sometimes it's from within your own fan base. Sometimes it's from outside the fan base. Maybe a rival, you know, just trying to do some trash talking that goes too far. And, you know, it's a good reminder that just, you know, being a beacon of support and help and, like, just showing some love to these guys after like a hard time or after a hard moment or in the middle of a difficult part of a journey or career, you know, just telling somebody you love them, man. Telling somebody that you hope the best for them and that you give them a word of encouragement goes a long way. That goes a long way. And we just need more of that. We just need more of that, like, in the world in general. There's so much going on with the world right now. You guys know me. I'm a massive military history junkie, and so everything going on right now has got my, you know, nerd part of myself gone hyperdrive right now. But we just need, even locally, we just need more love. You know, just tweeting some of these guys, something as simple. If you're friends with them on Facebook, just sending them a message and being like, hey, I just want you to know, you're great, and I want the best for you. Go out there and kill it. I think we just need more of that. Not even just athletes. I mean, that could be true for everybody, even just, you know, our best friends, you know, maybe somebody you haven't talked to, but just we need more love, man. There's so much going on right now. So much negativity, so much bad news and dour news. We don't need to be going and attacking people. I just, that was just such a waste of bites of information that just didn't need to exist. That was time of, that was just, that whole situation was just garbage. And I'm really, really glad that a bunch of people kind of stepped out and reached out to Evan a little bit and showed him some love. And I hope more of you guys do it. Not just to Evan, but to all of them. To everybody that's been a Rowdy player. You know, we talk about Rowdy's family. That's one way to do it. Speaking of family, part of our family here at the Unused Substitutes is Taco Bus. You want to show some love? How about this? Taco Bus proudly delivers a healthy, fresh, authentic Mexican taste experience to our Florida fans. Just one bite of a burrito, tostado, or quesadilla, and your taste buds will be singing traditional Mexican folk songs. Visit us today at one of our 12 locations, and remember to keep it chido. Well, we've essentially come to the end of our journey here tonight. I love you guys. I know everybody's listening. I mean, everybody as in like two people. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. We appreciate you all. We will be on the air next week. The games for the next upcoming matches are all on the road for the next 3 weeks. Well, 2 weeks at least. The 19th, the 23rd, and the 26th. Those games are all away for the Tampa Bay Rowdies preseason. As it stands, they're all officially closed door. So we will not be there potentially, unless cross our fingers with USF, we will potentially not be able to watch those games. So we really won't be able to get you any kind of like serious thoughts firsthand for those matches, but we'll do our best. You know us, we'll find a way to make some content and talk because that's what we do. And we do it pretty well, I think. All of that leading into, of course, the last preseason game, which is March 5th, hosting South Georgia Tormenta, a team that we've played a couple times in the past in preseason, and an event will be happening. I mean, obviously, we've got, you know, the team has sent out those RSVP notices, so if you are a season ticket holder, check your email, make sure you're getting into that. It looks pretty good, like we're probably going to go ahead and do a Twitch pregame show for that. That was kind of all but confirmed at this point. We've got some conversations about that coming up here in a few days, potentially to kind of nail out those plans. But yeah, the idea was thrown out there and they seemed pretty receptive to it. So that might be something on the menu. But, you know, look, they're going to have a bunch of giveaways. They're going to have deals for merchandise and things like that. So that's going to be an exciting party. That's going to be an event. I'm looking forward to it for certain. It's going to be good. It was good to be at Al Lang this past weekend. Weather was perfect. It was just a beautiful day. Downtown was buzzing. There's so many different events that were going on. It was really, really cool to be a part of it and to be down there. Had a chance to hang out at Corrigan's after the game with a couple of folks, and we got to chat about the game, some of our own observations. It was, by all accounts, a fun night. And yeah, I mean, it was fun. It was fun. And we will be coming at you very soon. We love yous. My We Love You tonight is going to be for, I'm going to give it to Matt Louster, because Matt was down. He was a fence gang member for the day. And, you know, it was fun seeing those guys that were out there. There were several people along the fence watching the game. Cheers to you folks for doing that. Obviously, I've got my nice cozy seats up in midfield to watch the game, but yeah, it was a fun time, definitely for certain. But yeah, we love you goes to Matt this week for the dedication that he certainly shows all year round. Thank you to Wolfface, to Radio St. Pete Online, and to Shamrock and Corrigan's. We appreciate all the support that you guys give to us week in and week out. If you are listening to the show, please, 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 please share this show with your friends. Give us a subscription if you're listening to us on a subscription platform. Give us a rating. If there is an option for a rating, give us a rating. Give us a review. It helps kind of bolster the number out with the algorithms to get us in front of Rowdy's fans that may not know about us yet. If you want to take your support to the next level, the best way to do that is Patreon. Starting as little as a dollar a month. Yes, for $12 a year, you can do an amazing thing and help us pay for all of these subscriptions that we have to run to do this and to have our show get out there. If you wanted to go crazy, you could join the executive producer level. Maybe go as high as $10 a month, and whatever you decide. Every little bit helps, because there's certainly a lot that goes into this, and we do appreciate sometimes the ability of upgrading a piece of equipment every now and then. It's always good. Thank you to our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier to MLS, USL, and U.S. Soccer. Get your custom scarves for your group or team at roughneckscarves.com. And if you are tired of the same old uniforms and cookie-cutter templates from Nike and Adidas, looking for a unique, completely custom kit for your youth club, Sunday league squad, adult, maybe even a pro team, Icarus FC can help you create the kit of your dreams at an affordable price. Let them help you design your new custom kit today at IcarusFC.com. Well, everybody, thank you for joining me tonight. Hopefully, everybody will be back next week. We will be back next week on the air. And with that, good night, Rowdy's fans, and we'll see you on the flip side.